Thanks, Steve. Welcome to the show, everybody. Happy Thursday. I'm Bill Leff. Jim Tarano is here once again. He's filling in for Wendy, who will return tomorrow. Jim, hello.
Nice to be back. This has been actually nice almost like back. A semi...
It's almost regular.
Yeah,
you're
weird.
Semi-regular.
I don't know what to do. I actually had to set my alarm clock.
How does it feel to be semi-regular?
Well, you know, a little Deucinex will help you.
Sure it will. Of course it will. A couple of things. First, during the crosstalk there, we were talking about the laugh that you used to do when you worked with Gary and you still do today.
Oh, yeah.
Which is very reminiscent of the Charles Nelson Reilly laugh. Right. Whenever something is said that could be construed a certain way,
right.
You do the Charles Nelson.
There's a little
rap.
Double entendre or a little maybe a hint of a gay reference.
Maybe.
I always just go, uh-huh.
As Charles Nelson Reilly did for years and years.
Yeah.
Now, you're the perfect person to run this past. I always thought when I was growing up and watching television in that era that you could make a fairly decent career for yourself just by having some sort of vocal intonation like that.
Oh, yeah.
Ruth Buzzy. Right?
Right.
Joanne Worley had one. Yeah, she would just do that.
And Phyllis Diller? Ha!
She did that.
Ha! Ha!
Charlie Callis would just go for no reason at all.
That's true.
So back then, in the 70s, really all you needed was a noise, and you could have a very nice career.
And my favorite, too, was Norm Crosby.
Yes.
The king of malapropes.
Yes.
And I just so you could either make a noise or be...
Say a word incorrectly.
Deliberately...
Or you could do an action, like Bewitched.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, but most of the comedians seem to... Like Jerry Lewis.
The king of the noise.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh.
Right.
He started it.
Lady.
Yeah, but there's... But Charles, I mean, what's so funny about that is that when he did it, I mean... I don't know how many layers of comedy were going on because
when Jerry Lewis was doing it, you mean?
Yeah. No, when Charles, because
oh, Charles
was closeted at the time.
Yeah.
And so he would throw that in,
right.
Which was kind of a wink, wink.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he never really admitted
his way of saying something semi unsavory is going on. See if you can figure it out.
You know, and Paul Lynde would always go, Sammy.
Right.
When you guys were kids watching them,
yes.
Did you think of them as being gay?
Not at all. Didn't even know what the word meant.
They were just being silly.
Right, exactly.
That's how TV presented those characters at the time. No one was gay at the time.
No.
They were just silly.
Yeah.
Right.
They were just big. They were,
right.
They were.
And play it up.
Yeah. Well, I remember in 1976, Elton John gave this interview to Rolling Stone and admitted that he was bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
I had to look it up.
Really?
I didn't even know what it meant. I had to go to a dictionary and go, okay.
To find out what
this
that
is
meant,
interesting,
exactly.
But what is that? This seems to be a big deal, but I don't know what it means.
when I was a kid, when the TV preview would come in the Sunday paper, in the Sunday Sun-Times,
I could just see you.
Oh, I was so excited.
This is great. What a great day.
The preview
is
here.
A great day.
The preview. So I would go through, at the time, the late night talk shows consisted of only Johnny Carson, right? So I would go through Monday through Friday
to
see who was going to be on. And if a Charlie Callis was on, I couldn't wait, when in reality, Charlie Callis' entire act
was
just him making funny noises.
Yeah, because he didn't really even have jokes.
Nothing.
Even when he did the Dean Martin roast,
he
would just go, and then they would cut to Orson Welles. He would go,
laughing. Yeah, he couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah.
Wendy and I were lucky enough years ago when we were, this is at The Loop, this is 25 years ago, we had Charlie Callis on as a guest.
Are you serious?
And I even asked him, I said, Charlie, please understand, I love you, I don't understand you. Why is this funny? It is funny.
It's hilarious.
I'm not questioning it, but please explain to me why I'm laughing, to which he replied, That was his answer to my question.
I remember Rip Taylor had confetti.
Yes.
And all he did was just throw, go, oh! And he was just, he was kind of like Charles, only he had the sight gag.
And he was another silly one.
Yes.
He was,
they didn't make him sillier.
Rip was very silly.
Do you remember when he would do a joke, when Rip Taylor would do a joke that didn't get a laugh, he would look at the audience and say, I'm going to smack you in a minute,
right.
And that would get a laugh.
And of course, then, remember he was the host of the $1.98 beauty
contest.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Chuck Barris show.
And was he on the, was he one of the Make Me Laugh guys?
No,
I'm trying to remember where I would see him.
I don't think, he would do the Tonight Show a couple times a year, and the shows that weren't
and a few
quite
variety
Merv
shows.
Griffin
he would,
type
yeah,
shows.
He would do a Merv. He would do a maybe a Dinah.
Yeah,
remember Dinah?
He's still
Shore.
Alive.
Is Rip still alive?
Yeah, he's still alive. But I haven't seen him do anything in years and years and years.
Well, it's hard to get confetti.
Right, right. The confetti embargo really ruined Rip Taylor's
well,
life.
One of the great Albert Brooks lines was when he was talking about Carrot Top. He goes, what if his trunk doesn't show up?
No act.
What does he do?
There's nothing you can do now. Right. All right. We'll discuss many things during the show. If you want to jump in at any point, you know how to reach us, right? It's 312-981-7200. You can call us there. You can text us there. I wonder if all this hay bale throwing is affecting the crops in some way.
You never know. Will they have hay?
Oh.
Will they have hay bales
can
given...
You
The lack of rain.
That's as farm as he can get.
I've got...
he didn't know what comes next.
I've got Max Armstrong on my speed dial. Hold on 1 second.
Hey, you rascal. Of course we have some hay.
Of course.
You rascal.
All right. Here's a serious question.
How many people do a Max Armstrong? Thank you very
just
much.
Just yourself.
Thank you.
I also like when Max will trail a word out, like the last letter, like he'll go, hello, young man. That's my favorite.
I remember, you rascal.
Yep. All right, so here's a serious question. It may not sound like a serious question, but it is a serious question.
All right.
Our mayor, Lori Lightfoot, was caught on tape calling Patrick Murray an FOP clown.
Thank God it was. I thought it was SOB.
No. The FOP, by the way, Steve, please tell me I'm right. Is it Fraternal Order of Police? Is that the FOP?
Yes.
Okay.
She's a FOP. He's a FOP.
When I first heard it, I'm trying to think of what those letters could mean, and then I went, well, he's a police officer. I'm guessing that's what
it is. Yeah, the word in question is clown, not FOP.
The clown part is the problem.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the clown is the
All right. Here's my
insult.
Well, let's run the clip, and boy, it's very clear that she's saying it. There's no question about it, but here's a clip if you've not heard it.
She's not denying it.
Back again. This is FOP clown.
Okay, so her words, oh, back again, this FOP clown. So here's my question, and I'm serious. I'm not kidding. Is that the worst thing in the world? Doesn't everybody have a couple people that they interact with, that they work with, that in their heads they're saying to themselves,
Steve says it about me on air.
On air, he says
it. Yeah, he doesn't even say it in his head.
I know. But is this...
It reminded me, was it Brick from the middle?
Yes.
Clown.
You just say things out loud?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's not the worst thing to be called a clown, but it's... The problem is she has to negotiate with this union, and they have a contentious relationship already.
So this
and
is
she had already called out the FOP. I think it was this very guy at an earlier meeting, or you know. So there's been no love lost between the two sides. This is, you know, you don't call a negotiating partner, or you're not supposed to, a clown. I loved her apology when she...
What did she say in the apology?
She said, I'm sorry I said it out loud.
Yeah, she admitted. Oh. Yeah, she's not saying, like, I was misquoted.
No.
She's just like, I'm sorry you heard that.
Right, I shouldn't have said it out loud.
That's even better.
I think, don't hold me, but I think the run was, are you sorry? And she said, I shouldn't have said it out loud.
Right.
Are you sorry? I'm sorry I said it out loud. Something like that.
That's even better.
Well, she's not backing down. She does not back down.
No.
Oh, do I respect that? See, one of the biggest problems that I have with politics is that it's so two-sided. You always see this during presidential debates, that the guys and the girls will slam each other for 90 minutes for 2 hours, and then at the end, it's all smiles and handshakes, everybody's friendly and stuff. I like when people are real. This is real.
Or they will always back off from a comment they said the night before.
Right.
Because
somebody got to them and said, hey, it's better for you if you back off.
Well, if the comment got heat, then they'll back off. If it doesn't, they stay with it.
Yes.
Yeah, this Lori Lightfoot's just like, hey.
You clown.
Clown's a clown.
She did another thing, and I think really... Politicians succeed, obviously, in what they do, but when they sort of show their personality some, too.
Yeah.
There was a news conference last week about the heat wave, and one of her staff members has a difficult-to-spell name or to pronounce name, and so the staff member pronounced it and started to spell it, and Lori Lightfoot just leaned forward. She goes, common spelling. which is a joke for reporters.
She's
a lot,
good.
Yeah, she's very good.
You know, she was on Colbert's show a month ago, 5 weeks ago, and I watched, and she wasn't overly funny. Like, these examples we're given are pretty funny, But you could tell she was genuine. I mean, I didn't know that much about her until the election really heated up.
So,
but
no
the more
did.
I know about her, the more I go, I like someone who's really honest.
She's a straight
like
shooter.
That. Yeah.
And she's very intelligent. And she clearly has a very kind of dark and sarcastic sense of humor, which is
great. You need that.
I love that.
Yeah. You got to have that.
Yeah.
Speaking of Colbert Show. Two nights ago, as the Cubs game is getting later and later.
Yeah, right. They're playing.
Game ended up being 13 innings long. I say to myself during a commercial break, I'm just going to flip over and see what's going on Stephen Colbert's show. Here's the problem with that. I live in this area where our satellite company is fighting with CBS.
All right.
And for the last week or 10 days, anytime you turned on CBS, there would be a little box that would show up for a second saying that they're in negotiations.
Right.
If you want to keep this station, you got to call that. And I'm thinking,
go to the website.
Just because I call a number, that's not going to make a bit of difference. So I'll just... Plus, every time this has happened in the past, and I'm not exaggerating, every time this has happened in the past, it happened with Comedy Central for a little while. It happened with a few of the other major networks. They always, always, always get it resolved just by the deadline. So I went, well, that's what's going to happen. So that was 3 days ago. We've been without CBS for 3 days, and right now it's not horrible because it's the summer rerun season,
right?
But I do like Stephen Colbert, and there's other shows, and I'm out of luck.
Well, to your point, now, that this carriage fee, that's what they're always complaining about.
Yeah.
Now, I have the other satellite company, Dish.
Yeah.
Had them for years, regardless. So about 8 months ago, they were going through something with HBO. Right?
Yeah.
So this was in November, and they're saying, you know, blah, blah, blah. So they took it off, like you're saying.
No HBO.
So you're expecting in a week
they'll come back.
All right. So now it's April, because in my mind, I say this has to be fixed by April, because that's when Game of Thrones is on.
Yeah.
So if they're going to play games over the winter, maybe over Christmas, fine.
Yeah.
But when Game of Thrones comes out,
you got to have this back working.
There's no way that Dish is going to not want to have Game of Thrones on for its viewers.
Right.
Comes and goes. In fact, then, you know, on my program guide, it would always say, HBO has removed this call, like you're saying, call the number or call the website.
What could all that do?
Nothing. But after a while, as it got into early April, all of a sudden the programming guide had said, go to HBO now and subscribe. They basically said, if you want Game of Thrones, we're not going to have it.
You got to find it elsewhere.
Go find it elsewhere.
Wow.
So, and to this day, right now, HBO is still not on Dish, and that's been since November. So it didn't happen. Usually it's always that two ticks to midnight, they resolve it. But with this,
but
they have not.
But look at all, if you have even the most basic of satellite or cable services, I'm just going to throw a number now, and I know it's not the right number, but there's probably 250 or 300 or 400 channels. So some of them must always be up for renegotiation, right? There's never going to be a downtime where none of those channels aren't up for renegotiation.
Right.
And for most of them, I could live without, but your major networks and HBO.
Right. Like I said, Game of Thrones, this was the big, I mean, don't forget, this was the final season.
Yes.
So, I mean, there was great anticipation for this for over a year.
Well, for CBS, I think the big deal will be when the football season starts,
and
I'm hoping it won't go that long.
But
no one in Chicago wants to not have the Bears games on.
Right, because a lot of Bear games are on CBS.
Yeah. I just wonder, if you do call that number, what does that make even the smallest bit of impact?
I cannot believe.
How would that matter?
I think they just want to give you a sense of empowerment.
I guess so. Yeah, you're part of this.
We're going to say
we'll help solve this.
15,000 people want HBO on. Fine.
Right.
What does that mean?
Right. Nothing.
Well, don't
they
want you to nag the people they're negotiating with?
I think they do. So is that what they'll tell you, Steve? Is keep on them?
Well send me some eggs. Who just egg their house?
Right.
Whose number are they giving you, though? I think that I would imagine the satellite company is giving you the cable operator's number, right?
I guess
the other side
or the CBS number.
But again, should I call that number? And actually, now I should call the number just to see what the result
is. Yeah, now it's
I'm
kind
curious
of intriguing.
Now. Yeah. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. We'll get you some news, and then there's a big show ahead. So stay here. It's Bill and Jim and Randy. There's more, Jim.
There's more.
More
of
coming.
This?
Yeah, jeez. Stick around. It's WGN. Steve, thanks very much. Later in the show, Paul Lisnick from CLTV will join us to talk about the Mueller testimony of yesterday, and then Patrick McDonald will be on at 11:35. To talk about new movies, most notably a new Quentin Tarantino movie that's
looking
getting a lot of attention.
Looking
I can't wait
forward to see that.
Can't wait. All right, I want to go back to a conversation that you had with Steve Bertrand and myself earlier today.
Was it for air?
No.
Usually when I talk to Steve.
This would not be a good thing to mention on air.
Don't drag me down into your little tarp.
Perfect time for
perfect
that.
Time.
Thank you for the setup,
better.
Steve.
That was well played. All right, so it started out because you wanted to find a newspaper.
Yeah, right? So I didn't get my newspaper delivered to my home today, and so I came here a little early, and I wanted to read the paper just
right.
to be up on things.
Right. Sure.
Maybe there's a topic we could talk about.
Yes.
So I didn't see one
yeah.
around, so I figured, as normal, I'll go to the newsroom.
Right.
So I walk in the newsroom, and I said, are there any newspapers? And I got a look from everyone in the newsroom as if I was from 50 years ago.
Right.
Who is this relic right. that just walked in? Right.
And that was different from earlier this week.
And then you asked for an abacus,
yeah.
which is also from a long time ago.
Thank God. I mean, no, we don't have those anymore.
But isn't it funny that, for people who don't know, we're owned by the Tribune, which is...
Well,
not anymore, the newspaper, though.
Well,
it's a media.
I guess. All right, that's fair.
But still, I understand that most news is generated now from the screen.
Yes.
I understand
it's
that.
It's all online.
Still,
now.
Isn't there just that
nostalgic feel
yeah,
of having a newspaper
of
in your hand?
Something tangible? Don't you just want to have some ink on your fingers?
Steve, how long has it been? Since we moved here?
Yeah, we haven't gotten a newspaper.
There used to be in the old building, there was a stack, and I mean a giant stack of Tribunes, a giant stack of Sun-Times.
There's still people's names on them, like Spike.
Exactly, yes. Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And now so, there's not even a stray one.
Yeah, no, I would like a newspaper. I actually subscribed at home so I could bring a paper in with me.
Yeah.
It is all online, but I like to see sometimes the layout, like
right.
how they're playing stories, or if they were in the recorded early enough to be in the paper,
yeah.
things like that.
Yeah,
I miss it so much. But, I used to read it every day.
Oh, don't you miss it? How could you not miss it?
But here's the thing: isn't this the Tribune Media?
Yes,
right.
I tried that, Mary. It's not going to work.
Here's the thing: I subscribe to the paper now so I can have one.
Mm-hmm.
The guy never has it on my curb early enough,
oh,
so
no.
I get home from work and put it in the recycling.
By the time you get home, all the news is old.
When we were in Maine a couple of weeks ago, part of our service at the hotel is they put a New York Times by your door every
Remember
morning.
Those good old days?
So
right.
my wife and I would sit out on the deck and read the New York Times, and I said to her, I know this is crazy, but I can't remember the last time I did this. I went for my whole life, I read the newspaper cover to cover every day, sometimes two or three newspapers.
Definitely.
And then it's been a year maybe since
wow.
the last time I held a newspaper.
So really, because I get my, I still get, I mean, I'm one of the, probably the only one on the block. Who gets it delivered anymore?
Yeah.
How many
assume.
Sentences could you finish with? I'm the only one in the block.
Almost anything, right? And it's nice of you to say block instead of country or world. I'm surprised you didn't just go world.
But my gosh, I mean, I didn't think it was that kind of a strange thing. But for I would just thought a newsroom,
right,
at a radio station,
right,
50,000 watts.
Okay.
Right.
It's just I was surprised.
I'm on your side here.
Yeah.
It is strange that you can't. And even if you need one, good luck. You go, you'll comb the building. You won't be able to find one.
So,
all right. Now that led to something interesting.
Right.
I think this is the best part of this whole thing. Yeah. You said that when you're not home, you have an agreement with one of your neighbors where they'll come to your driveway, pick up the newspaper, and then they put it in your house, don't they?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if I don't put it on hold, if it's only for one day or so, then it's like, can you just go by and throw it in the back just so it's not sitting so they don't pile up?
Yeah.
But then one time we went on a vacation for an extended period of time, and we come back and we drive in the driveway and we get our bags, and I go to the back door and the door's open.
The back door of your house is open.
So I'm like,
what happened here?
Well, I thought the agreement, the social contract we had was that you would lock my door after you were in my house feeding the cat.
But it was never said out loud, was it? It was just...
I guess shame on me.
Right. You got to be very specific on the ground rules.
If you lock the door every time, then you got to find the key the next time.
What a pain.
There's a lot going on there.
So then this crazy crooked road of our conversation got to the fact how I locked the doors all the time, and I guess a lot of people don't even lock their doors.
Isn't that crazy?
I can't believe that.
Steve, you didn't think it was that important, that locking the door wasn't the biggest deal in the world.
Well, I am the most door locky in our house.
Yeah.
But I'm not like Toronto. I mean, no. Oh. I mean, there'll be sometimes I'll pop up to the store and not lock the door. Or...
While you're gone, you just leave the house with the doors unlocked?
It's going to be just a few minutes or something.
Yeah.
You want to hear a great story?
What's going to happen?
Your stuff could get stolen.
Yeah. I mean, people can, first of all, squatters.
Squatters are going to come in. Squatters come in, right. Steal your newspaper.
But yeah, I mean, don't you have something of worth?
Yeah.
Right?
You have a really nice lamp.
Your recliner.
You know, other than my computers,
really,
I mean, what they could have it.
I mean, that's like Mayberry. I can't fathom not locking the door. And I didn't even mention this when we had our conversation.
Yes.
So I have an old house, and the people before us, they put a deadbolt on the door that leads to the basement.
Uh-huh.
So this way, if someone did break in the basement, they couldn't get
up. They have a safe area that they could stay to.
I'm so neurotic about locking doors, right?
Yeah.
When I walk past, I will check a door.
Sure. Why not? Why wouldn't you?
My wife was in the basement.
Yeah.
I completely...
Did you lock her in?
I locked her in the basement, and I came, and I got in my car, left the house.
No, for how long?
I don't understand her.
For an hour. So she had to call her uncle, who had to drive over.
Wait, did he have a key?
He has a key to the house.
Why didn't she call you?
Well, because I didn't have my flip phone on.
Oh.
I forgot to have my phone. Plus, I was an hour away. By the time, because she was like doing some busy work in the basement for a while.
Yeah, right.
And I said goodbye, and then
I'm so used
to locking that door at all times, and so then she couldn't get, because the back door was locked. So even though she can get out through the basement door,
can I make a guess?
Wait, so the basement door, back door, locked from the outside?
No, you have to lock that also. Right?
I had to lock. Yeah,
yeah,
oh.
Yeah.
My guess is that's the kind of thing that will only happen once.
Oh, well,
you wouldn't have that. Wouldn't happen more than
I
once.
I hope. Well, I mean, every time she's down there, I go, "Oops!" You know, then right. I, you know, now it's become a family joke.
Sure,
yeah, but one person laughing.
Here's where you might want to pull out the only person in the block line.
Right.
So then, when all of a sudden, I did turn my phone on. I get this message, and she's like, "Where are you?"
Yeah.
Turn around. You locked me in the basement. I can't get So she couldn't get in the back door.
That's horrible.
I felt terrible. Then I'm sitting there going in my head, you know how you retrace your steps?
Yeah.
And you wonder, what did I do? And I'm like, I
can help you with this one. You locked your wife in the basement.
I can't even believe I did this, because I remember when I was leaving the house, I had a briefcase in my hand.
Yeah.
And I was taking the garbage. I have a big black garbage bag.
Yeah.
In one hand, my briefcase in another. When did I even have a free hand to lock that door?
So subliminally, you did this intentionally.
It's just so ingrained as I'm leaving the house.
That's what you do.
Because that basement door is right by the back door to leave.
Right.
So it's just almost a reflex action. Yeah, when I'm leaving. And this one, I even had something in my hand, a garbage bag, and I was able to still click that lock.
Wow.
Yeah, so she was down there, and I think at the end of the day, she did have to call her uncle. Because she did call the neighbor.
Well, she cried uncle.
Yeah.
We've established that.
And the neighbor wasn't home. And so she was like basically locked out of the house.
Oh my God. Oh my God. And we're laughing at it.
Here's the thing. And, you know, Jim can laugh about it now.
Now, right. Sure. Because time has passed. But I bet there wasn't that much laughter that day.
I'd love to hear his wife tell the story.
Oh, believe me. You couldn't be able to hear it. There's too many expletives.
All right, let's do this. A quick break and then more of this. We're talking about home security. It's Bill and Jim and Forney on WGN. Bill F. It's Jim Toronto. Jim is sitting in for Wendy, who will be back tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She's coming back tomorrow.
Nice.
So, listeners, wear something nice. Would it kill you to wear something nice? A bunch of callers want to weigh in on this, so let's let them. We'll start out with John. Hello, John.
Hi, Bill. I just want to say, I get two newspapers delivered every day. and I'm the only one on the block that gets newspapers.
Isn't that sad, John? That's
usually
horrible.
Usually they would be tossing them right and left.
Yeah.
Both sides of the street. Now it's like
both sides of the street. Nobody else gets newspapers delivered. I'm wondering how long newspapers can go on.
Yeah, isn't that sad?
As people drop, you know, getting newspaper, how low can the subscriber rate go before they stop printing?
Well, they're moved in different directions now. You are doing it online.
And, right.
I know. Basically, it's going to be online only. I don't know. I wonder when they're going to stop printing newspapers.
And the other side of the coin is, like, on some days, especially on Saturday, it's almost like a pamphlet.
Right.
I mean,
paper was always thin.
Yeah, but now it's like anorexic.
Reading a fortune cookie.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even thin.
John, thank you so much.
Okay.
Keep reading the paper. Don't give up on it.
No, I won't. I love having my coffee in the morning and reading, having a newspaper in my hand.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I just like doing that.
I totally get it. Thanks, John. Have a good weekend.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. You too. Bye.
Take care. Let me get one more in here real quick. Hold on a second. Hey, Eric?
Elton and Bill, how are you doing?
How are you? What's up?
Live and well, thanks. Hey, I was at a breakfast diner the other day. I asked for a newspaper. I just like reading newspapers, and they looked at me like I was just from another planet.
Can you believe it?
I got that look from the
millennial
newsroom.
Girl who's the waitress. You know, she's like, a what? And like, a newspaper.
From something that was so commonplace for decades and decades, and now when you do it, people have no idea.
It was a staple of society. Like,
sure it was. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And on another note, my house got broken into and I just now fixed the back window. This happened February 2nd, and the way I remember that is the day my mother died, I came home and walked by the back door and heard glass crunching underneath my feet. And I was like, uh-oh. And it's like, uh-oh, somebody broke in. So I just now fixed the window.
Yeah.
So that was my handyman project for
this past week.
What
were the most valuable items they took from your mom?
They didn't get in.
Oh, they
fortunately,
didn't.
I had a double cylinder deadbolt. So when they broke the window at the back door, tried to reach in to turn the knob.
Yeah.
And they couldn't get in. Mm-hmm. However, it's against the fire code. To have a keyless double entry deadbolt.
Sure.
But so
now you wound up getting a ticket,
right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
That's how life is.
No, the policeman came out and he took pictures and said, I'll take a report, but do an extra watch. That's about all they can do.
That's the limit. Well, thank you, Eric. Have a good weekend.
I find it strange that in a metropolitan city or suburbs,
almost every city is metropolitan. Go ahead.
Boy, I haven't missed this.
Can I just say, I'm walking by the studio, by your office, Bill, and Jim got there early and he didn't have a newspaper, and he looked like a Westworld robot shut down.
Right. No, I know.
I didn't know what to do. He's just sitting there doing nothing.
Sat there. I had nothing. I had no papers. He goes, are you meditating? I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing.
A lot of people would pull out their phone, at work.
No.
There's nothing on my phone.
Right. No, I understand it.
But just to leave a door open, I mean, that is a great, I guess it's a trust. I don't know if it's.
I have friends who never, ever lock their door.
I just can't. I can't get my arms around
it. But Steve, why wouldn't they? Why not take that extra third of a second?
Exactly. What's the big deal?
I don't get it either. But, they can be gone on vacation and we know we can get in if we need to.
Well, there are some times when I leave my house.
Yes.
I am two blocks away in my car.
Yeah.
And I'm at a stop sign, perhaps, waiting to merge into traffic.
Yeah.
And I go, wait a minute. Did I lock the door?
You go back, I hope.
I will turn around, drive two blocks.
Right.
And I know I did it.
Right.
But I have to have that peace of mind that I go there and sure enough, I did lock it.
Now, to my wife and my daughters, closing a door, and I'm talking about the front door of the house or the back door of the house, an access door that anyone could use, just closing it is just as good as locking it, and I've explained many, many times,
no,
you have to physically lock it.
And it doesn't matter. I don't care if you live in the greatest, safest area in the world.
Right.
We're a mobile society.
Sure.
The ne'er-do-wells
They can travel now.
Yeah, they can get there. They don't need a horse and buggy.
Right, they're allowed to travel.
They can get to your house.
I know.
And they can leave quickly, too, after they take the stuff.
I started to tell you this story. A couple of years ago, a house two blocks away from us was robbed at night. Somebody broke in while the family was upstairs sleeping. They took the stuff on the lower level. They didn't go upstairs, but they took everything they could of value on the lower level and left. Two blocks from our house. So then I said to my family, doesn't this make you want to lock the doors? To which they all said, that was two blocks away. It's not like it happened.
What are the chances?
Right. This whole area, we're safe for at least 10 years now.
Yeah,
there's
a shield.
Right. There's a shield of safety. Yeah, it's in place
the
now.
The cone of silence is around us. They can't get in. Wow. I'm just that is so foreign to me.
Yeah.
And I lock my doors in the car.
Sure.
When I was a kid, I used to lock my bike.
Yeah.
Remember we used to have those combination locks?
The kryptonite locks?
Yeah, it was like the four little numbers.
Oh, right.
Well, you went tick, 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 tick.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I would lock my bike. Some people just left their bike.
No.
And then their bike was gone.
Right.
I mean, I guess.
Hooligans will steal your stuff, Jim. You know that. That's what hooligans do.
That's where they get the name.
Right.
wouldn't be a word if there wasn't a need for
That's so true. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, which is locked at night, if anyone's listening, right here on WGN Radio. Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill F. It's Jim Toronto. Jim is filling in for Wendy. She will be returning tomorrow. So many texts on our last topic about newspapers and the fact that it used to be you could find a newspaper anywhere.
Come on. You'd go. I was looking for a neighborhood paper, and I stopped at four different gas stations and convenience stores and still couldn't find one.
Right. I know what you mean.
Those neighborhood papers used to be right next to the Tribunes and the Sun-Times in those little stacks.
It's led to a shortage of rubber bands also, because I remember when I was growing up, you could find a rubber band anytime you wanted in any room in your house, and now you can't. It's because I don't have a rubber band around my newspaper.
Did you have the paper out when you were young?
I never had one, but I had friends who had it, and they'd have to get up like at 5 a.m.
You hear those
and their
stories.
Route was like an hour and a half, but a paper boy now, their route's only going to be three or four houses, right?
And they're in cars.
Yeah, right.
My paper guy...
On a bicycle?
Stops his car.
Yeah.
And throws
it. Used to be a bike all the time. Here's a texter from 847. My husband's solution to retirement was to subscribe to a third paper every day. I think we are single-handedly keeping the journalism business alive. It's very possible.
I would always read three or four papers a day.
Always probably the Tribune, the Sun-Times, and maybe USA Today.
And the New York Times?
Yeah.
If it was around.
That I have to say... I'm not taking anything away from the Chicago papers. The New York Times still puts out a very thick, very reputable paper.
And on Sunday,
it's gigantic.
Yeah, it needs a
whole
forklift.
Week.
Yeah, it's a forklift.
I know.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like I said, there's some days when the Trib or the Sun Times come, and it's like a pamphlet. It's
you
like
can
two
see
pages.
It.
I'm like, geez.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, come on.
The other thing I wanted to discuss, and I imagine we'll bring this up later with Patrick McDonald. There was a notable celebrity death yesterday. That's getting almost no attention.
Yeah, I know who you're talking
and
about.
And I think I know why, but I'll throw that idea past you.
Okay.
Rutger Hauer, who was so good in so many movies over the years, passed away at the age of 75.
The Hitchhiker.
He was the Hitchhiker.
Yeah.
For me, if you're looking classic Rutger Hauer, you look at his role in Blade Runner, where he was just such a great bad guy. But that leads me to my theory is maybe sometimes... with guys who made a career playing villains, maybe they don't always get the attention that the guys who played heroes get.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? I thought about that with Alan Rickman for a while.
Yeah, but then he became, you know, in Harry Potter, and even though he was kind of a semi-victim villain for a while, at least. That's a good point, but although, don't you love Anthony Hopkins?
And he usually plays a villain, too.
Hannibal Lecter?
Gosh,
you can't get much more villainous than that.
Why isn't Rutger Hauer's death more impactful? Why isn't there more written about him?
Well, because I don't think... I think he made a few very well-known films or some... But I don't think he's been consistently in movies. I just think a lot of people don't even know who he... I mean, today, we talked about this off the air a couple times. If something doesn't happen within the last 3 years...
Yeah.
You're off the radar screen.
Yeah, I guess so.
Now, when was the last time Rutger Hauer... Now, I'm trying to think. Wasn't he in a Batman movie? Or one of these superhero movies?
Yeah, he was in one of the Batman movies.
Yeah.
Maybe Batman Begins, maybe the first one, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. But
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I remember he was in that.
But I don't think he played enough of roles in the last 10 years.
Oh, maybe.
Where you would, if you're not,
he's
in,
not
that,
in the consciousness,
in that zeitgeist of yeah. the last 5 years, I don't think, sadly.
There's a story about him that I had heard in the past, but then I read about it yesterday as I was reading about his career. He gives this speech in Blade Runner. I hate to give this part away. Anytime there's a movie
okay,
that's
come on.
Years and years and years ago.
You're not worried about a spoiler alert, are you, after 40 years?
He's a replicant in the movie, all right? Rutger Hauer's character is a replicant.
If we can't talk about the Blade Runner,
I know.
Then we're in trouble.
It's been a long time ago. Jim, I'm not kidding. A year ago, I mentioned something from The Wizard of Oz, and all these people are like, hey,
hey, come
are you
on,
doing?
What?
I haven't seen it
what?
Yet.
I didn't even see the color part yet. I didn't get past the black and white.
You have to be very delicate when you're talking about movies from forever ago. All right. So he gives this speech towards the end of Blade Runner, this beautiful speech, about basically about what it's like to either be a replicant or be human, but right. there's more going on in the speech, and it's beautiful. It's yeah. it's a great last scene for his character, and I didn't know this, but I'd read it years ago, and then I reread it yesterday, that he kind of improvised that speech. There was a speech in place that was good, but he wanted it to be more impactful.
Wow.
So while they were filming it, he added this whole extra soliloquy to it that's really the best part of
yeah.
it. And the writer was there on the set, and when he was done with this take, he looked over at the writer like, I'm sorry, but my character had more to say, and all the writer could do was say, that was way better than what I wrote,
wow.
so you win.
Very
you
cool.
You know?
Yeah.
But I just love that he had the guts right there as they're filming to go, wait a minute, I may be done, but I'm not done yet.
And he
more.
Was very cool.
Oh, so cool.
I mean, Rutger Hauer, first yeah. of all, that name.
Right.
Rutger.
It says
come
tough
on.
Guy.
So right away.
I'm a tough guy.
You're already got, even with no one has seen you yet.
Yeah.
There's the anticipation of what a Rutger Hauer yeah. will look like. And then he fit the bill.
In The Hitchhiker, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't there a scene where he ties a guy to two different trucks and they go in different directions? So. He's not a nice man.
No, no, he's not. No, he's a villain.
He's not a nice man at all.
Very sadistic. And that, what year was that one from? That was like from the...
That's got to be 30 years old
yeah,
or more.
At least it was in the 80s, early
right.
to mid-80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
he
yeah.
always just played such a great, really, in the history of guys who made their money playing bad guys, he's right up in the Hall of Fame.
And I tell you, the thing is, if you're an actor, the bad guy is the great role.
That's the role the actor wants. It's more
not,
interesting.
It's not memorable,
yeah.
or it's not endearing
yeah.
to most people.
Yeah.
But if you're an actor, that's where you get to really act.
Sure.
Because you have to be sinister and villainous, and you but also want to be, like as I said before with Anthony Hopkins, the great thing about Hannibal Lecter is, as terrible as this guy is,
yeah,
he's still intriguing,
right?
You actually like him despite how terrible he
yeah
is.
I know.
I mean
it's not the forget, easiest thing in the world to
yeah,
pull off.
Hannibal the cannibal,
right
I mean that's where
and yet you're pulling when you're watching the movie.
You are.
I hope
really,
he gets away. I hope he escapes.
I hope when he has that face that he just tore off somebody and,
yeah.
and is now wearing
yeah.
I hope that gets him out of jail.
Let's hope. Fingers are crossed. All right, we'll take a quick break. Paul Lisnick's going to join us from CLTV. We'll talk about yesterday's testimony. Stick around. It's Bill and Jim in for Wendy on WGN.
Wow, Jasmine.
Yeah.
Is she, do you pick the music or does
Jasmine
she?
Jasmine picks the music.
I have to
or
say.
I play all Hall & Oates all day.
I don't know
day.
If she's doing this because I'm here, but I mean, she played an Elton John song before and now a Bruce. Those are my
yeah.
two. Those
I
are
know.
My one and
she
two.
Knows. She
wow.
knows. She knows.
Nice.
Paul Lisnick is joining us right now. Paul, of course, political analyst for WGN TV, host of Politics Tonight, seen weeknights at 5:30 p.m. and then shown again at 10 p.m. on WGN's CLTV. Paul, how are you?
I'm good. Just eating a mini donut while I'm.
Nothing beats these treats. Nothing
do they have
beats
to pay for that extra mention?
No, you're fine. Everyone's
okay.
fine.
Is it dusted with cinnamon?
It's got to be dusted with cinnamon. That's
oh
how,
my
that's
God.
What makes them good.
Powdered
right,
sugar is good too, but okay.
we're 24 hours removed from yesterday's testimony. Was it kind of what you expected? Were there any major surprises?
Could you repeat the question, please, Bill?
I'm sorry. Everything I have to say, I previously said. Read it.
Oh,
there.
You did? No. All right.
You know, look. Here was the unknown. We haven't seen Robert Mueller in public for speaking, testifying for about 6 years. So the last time we saw him, hey, he's strong. He's, you know, he controlled the testimony, and basically everybody was warned, look out, you're not going to control this guy. That was then, and this was now. And so here we saw a much more apparently or appearingly frail man, much more halting in his answers. It gave a lot of people pause. I noticed it. We, of course, covered it wall-to-wall on WGN, and I noticed it right up front as other people did and started tweeting. But that being said, what was the whole purpose of yesterday? You know, we always knew he was never going to go beyond his report. He said he would never do that. So Democrats were always hoping, saying, look, but given the fact that nobody read that report, at least we will get him to publicly tell us what that report said. In the end, he didn't really do it. In the end, he sort of said, when they would say, would you read that, he'd go, why don't you read it? And so it was really kind of a set of sentences that got made. I don't think Democrats got what they wanted out of it. And Republicans were a little careful. They attacked him a little bit, but not as much as they otherwise might. Probably nobody should be putting this, you know, hero who has given his life to public service on that much of a defensive, and some did, most didn't.
And yet, with all that you just said, Paul, both sides to some extent are claiming victory.
Well, they kind of have to, right? I mean, yeah. Although nobody ever says, well, we certainly took a whipping there. So, yes, they are. But I think what you have is basically, I knew that when things were over, the president, when he talked next, which was moments later, would set the tone and the pace for what we were going to get. Now, remember, the president said he wasn't going to watch it. Then he was going to check in on it. I think it's pretty clear he watched it from the first gavel to the last, given the number of tweets that he sent out during it. But out came the president. We won. I'm vindicated. You heard it. No obstruction, no collusion. He just kept with the party line. And I don't think that there's a voice louder than his to otherwise dominate that sense of things, which is why Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats still have to be very cautious, unlikely to proceed towards impeachment, because they just don't have a public that's up for that. And they were hoping yesterday might trigger some interest in it. I don't think polls are going to show that it did.
So, Paul, do you think that now, given that that Mueller has testified, we've had the report come out, are we done hearing about the Mueller report? Do you think that now this is the final, or will this somehow keep cropping up?
You might be done hearing, well, you know, you'll never be done hearing about the report.
No, but in terms of it having any kind of real impact on, as you said, impeachment or resignation or crimes and misdemeanors, I mean, is it pretty much, it's a wash?
Well, the question is, what do Democrats do next? I think that's what you're asking me. And essentially, Nancy Pelosi told us yesterday, next up, court battles. We're going to go to court. We're going to try and get people to testify, like Don McGahn, the former White House counsel. We're going to go after documents. The White House is basically saying no to everything we're asking for, whether it's in writing or not. So I think you're going to get a lot of those court battles. But as a lawyer myself, I can tell you, these things don't happen quickly. So even if Nancy Pelosi, when asked about impeachment yesterday, you know, she doesn't close the door to it. She can't do that. She has over 90 members of her caucus who are talking about wanting to impeach. So given the fact that she can't close the door, she's giving no indication that she will pursue it. So and these court efforts take a long time. So how they accomplish anything before 2020, I don't see how it happens. The bottom line, if Democrats are looking to remove President Trump, no matter what it is, people believe he did, perhaps he did. The bottom line is he's not going anywhere except to be tossed out by a 2020 election.
Paul, there was allusions yesterday to the fact that Donald Trump could not be prosecuted while in office. But then, the way it was shown yesterday, he could be once he's out of office. You got that too, right? You picked up on that.
Well, yeah, and I think some people get confused a little bit about that. Let me explain it. It was Congressman Mike Quigley from our area who brought those questions up. So here's the bottom line. You have everybody in the world saying nobody's above the law, not even a president of the United States. Forget Trump. That nobody is above the law, never a president. Well, what do you have here? You have a memo in the Department of Justice, and it's just a memo that says you cannot indict a sitting president. Now, Mueller kept referring to that as to indict would be unconstitutional. He's wrong. It is not a constitutional thing. What Mueller, I think, is saying, and what is constitutional, is that while the Constitution is silent about indicting a sitting president, the Constitution has an avenue for addressing wrongdoing. It's called impeachment. So essentially, what Mueller said in his testimony, Republicans say he exonerated Trump, Democrats say, look, he pointed out all this obstruction. The reality of it is, he pointed out all this obstruction, but he then said, I'm not addressing it, I'm not even considering it, because I don't have the power to do so. Essentially, Congress, here it is, I've done the work for you, you take the next step, the Constitution says it's you that has to do something about it. That's the reality of it. Now, there are statute of limitations on these things, 5 years. So if the president is reelected in 2020, his time in office will survive the statute of limitations. There will be legal arguments around it to say, you know, that the statute stayed, meaning it gets stopped while he's in office. Those are all to play out 5 years from now. But for now, the bottom line is, and the more likely result is, if you can't indict a sitting president, and that's the way it is, and the president is reelected, then whatever it is he did or is accused of doing will ultimately go unaddressed by the judicial system.
I'm curious as to his choice, Robert Mueller's choice, on which answers he deflected and which answers he gave. Do you know what I mean? There were times where I went, oh, he's not going to answer this, but he did. And then there were other times where I went, what harm could come in answering this? And he said, well, I've already written that down. What exactly helped him figure out what to answer and what not to answer? Because I couldn't figure that out.
Well, Bill, here's where... The answer is, he was much more forthcoming in the second part, the afternoon part, in front of the Intel Committee, when the questions were about Russia. That's what Mueller wanted to talk about tomorrow. His view, right or wrong, I'm not judging it, I'm just explaining it, his view about the whole obstruction thing is, don't talk to me about it, I've got nothing to do with it. And he even said, and by the way, don't ask me about the Attorney General, don't ask me about the Steele dossier, I'm not going there. It was in the afternoon, when he was asked about what is Russia doing, are other countries doing it, that he did not mince words. And basically said, it absolutely is going on now, today, will continue, and Russia's not alone, everybody wants in on this game, and Congress, the president, needs to do something about it. That's when you got him answering questions. It was more on the substance, and not about, say, a particular question that he was asked.
So what's wrong with us, though, that we know that, we know there's collusion with Russia, and we're all just going, well, what do we do? What do we do? Shouldn't we be doing something about it? We don't seem to be.
Well, is it collusion, though? Is it collusion, or is it that Russia is trying to proactively, infest our system? That's the question, though.
Look, here's what is known. And again, I'm always careful, as you know, I'm neutral on the air because you have pro-Trump people, anti-Trump sure. people listening, and people often hear things the way they want to hear them. The bottom line is, there was clearly meetings between Trump people and Russians. All that is fact. It's absolutely out there. What has happened is that through conservative media, through the president's own statements, it has all been downplayed so much that essentially the world of Trump supporters, put it at 40-some percent, 43%, 44%, basically say either I don't think it happened, or if it did, I don't actually care. The issues people care about simply are the economy's doing good, I'm good with that, you're giving me conservative judges, anything else that's happening, I don't much care. Now, is it hypocritical from the way things were under, say, the Obama administration, when President Obama would even think of meeting with a dictator? He was absolutely, you know, chastised for that by Republicans. How could he consider doing it? But you can look at the debt and deficit, Bill and Jim, the same way, which is Republicans are all about debts and deficits, and yet they don't seem to spend money fast enough, including the bill that passed just the other day, which is going to continue to increase the deficit. But research shows most people actually don't care about the deficit. In direct answer to your question, what are we doing about keeping Russians from doing it again, I can tell you there were two bills that went to the Senate yesterday that dealt with election security, and Mitch McConnell killed them both, won't even allow them to come up. That's your answer.
Because that seems to be the problem here. At the end of the day,
yeah,
I'm worried about the next 20 years, not the next five.
Right.
You know?
Well, that's right. And I think in the short term, I mean, you've heard the president say, I talked to Putin. He said, doing anything. Why should I question him?
Right.
So I don't think, I mean, in 2020, the government will tell you they're taking all sorts of steps. But when you look at the facts, it appears to be that Mitch McConnell, for whatever reason, is blocking the bills that could be assisting in election security. He's simply blocking them from going through. So not much is going to happen for 2020. Now, maybe once there's a Democrat in office, you'll see Republicans playing a very different tune and saying, now we absolutely have to cut deficits. Now we absolutely have to make sure nobody's interfering with the elections, because the last thing we want is a Democrat pulling this off. So that's when you'll see things change.
Paul, thank you for joining us. Always appreciate your expert analysis. Paul Liznick, of course, the political analyst for WGN TV, the host of Politics Tonight, which you can watch tonight or any weeknight from 5:30 at 5:30 and then again at 10. And he's the host of Behind the Curtain, the podcast at WGN Plus. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate
and
it.
And you're very welcome. But not to mention the new book, Assume Guilt. It's political fiction, all about Illinois corruption, but there's no Illinois corruption here.
Not even to mention that book, but we did.
Not even
so
to mention
we got it.
And save a mini donut for him.
Please save him a mini donut.
Back to the donuts.
Thank you, Paul. Have a
Thank
good weekend.
You guys. Be well. Bye-bye.
We'll take a quick break, and then Patrick McDonald joins us. We'll talk about a very anticipated new movie from Quentin Tarantino. Stick around, Bill and Jim, on WGN. Thank you, Ryan. It's Bill Leff. It's Jim Toronto. Jim is sitting in for Wendy. Wendy will be back tomorrow. Patrick McDonald is our guest. Patrick is a film critic over at HollywoodChicago.com and tour guide for Chicago Film Tour. Go to ChicagoFilmTour.com for more information, or HollywoodChicago.com. They both have it. Hello, Patrick. How are you?
Donuts,
too. You're and lover of what?
Tiny donuts.
Oh, everybody loves tiny donuts.
Can't hold me closer, tiny donuts.
That was those were the original lyrics,
right?
Yes.
Everybody thinks it was Tony Danza, but it's really
tiny donuts. Patrick, earlier in the show, yes. Jim and I were talking about the loss of one of the great villains in movie history, yes. Rutger Hauer, mm-hmm. who, in my opinion, isn't getting enough attention.
Right,
really isn't. What are your thoughts on Rutger Hauer? He was always a great bad guy, wasn't he?
Yeah, you know, and he did. He was sort of the ultimate character guy, too, in the sense that he established himself as that villainous person.
Mm-hmm.
And but, you know, we forget that he also did he had such a long career. He did a film called The Legend of the Holy Drinker, which was an Italian film.
Wow.
Which is one of the most intriguing. When I was looking up his filmography, mm-hmm. I said, that one really hit me. It was also...
What is that about? I've never heard of that.
It's about a guy who's sort of like a homeless guy, and he gets 200 francs from somebody with the promise that he will eventually give it back to the church. So it's a misadventure of him trying to get these 200 francs back to the church.
Mm-hmm.
So this was on the short list for the 61st Oscars for the Best Foreign Language.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So, and he was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Right, yeah. We talked
about
that.
Which is great, and Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. So I like his little appearances like that.
Yeah.
His genre was not one that I really have delved into because he did a lot.
I have to make a quick correction about Rutger Hauer. You and I earlier kept saying he was in the movie The Hitchhiker.
The Hitcher.
Yeah. I was thinking back to, like, he went from obscurity where no one in the United States knew who he was.
Right.
He was kind of popular overseas, but no one in the U.S. knew him. And then in 1981 or 1982, he did Nighthawks, Blade Runner, and Osterman Weekend within a two-year span, and all of a sudden everybody went, I don't know who this guy is, but he's scaring me. He's frightening me.
Well, he's just
such a great bad guy.
A presence, and that's what gets you noticed.
Yep, sad loss. Rutger Hauer passing away at the age of 75 years old.
Young.
Way too young. What announcements were made for entertainment, for movies, or for television, if you prefer, at the San Diego Comic-Con? Every year, they do these amazing panels at the Comic-Con, and they always announce upcoming things. What was announced last week at the Comic-Con?
Well, Phase 4 is starting. This is there are phases of the Marvel Universe, and Phase 3 has ended with Spider-Man Far From Home. So we're going to start Phase 4 with a Black Widow movie, which will be next May.
Scarlett Johansson.
Yes, Scarlett Johansson. And they announced Shang-Chi and the Shang-Chi, thank you. Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. Now, this is a hero that developed out of the Kung Fu craze of the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
This Marvel, he had all these Kung Fu powers, joins the Avengers. He has the ability to make multiple duplicates of himself.
Oh,
which is very handy.
Yeah.
When you think about it.
Does he have a 3D printer, or how is he doing this?
He invented it.
Oh, he did.
Or maybe Tony Stark did, and he just took it.
So they showed at the convention, at the Comic-Con, they showed kind of a blueprint for what we'll see for the next 5 years or so, right?
Yes. Yeah. They really took it a long way. Mahershala Ali was announced as to do a Blade reboot.
The old Wesley Snipes.
Yes.
And, movies.
And of course, Natalie Portman was introduced to much fanfare at the Comic-Con.
She was in Thor, the original Thor movies.
She's going to be Mrs. Thor?
She's going to be.
Is that what it is?
This is Thor 4. I'm still Thor.
Love and Thunder is the name.
Love and Thunder.
And she's Jane Foster, who takes over for Thor.
Yeah.
When Thor is, you know.
Because I saw a picture with the hammer.
Yes.
Oh, really?
She had the hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the biggest announcement. And also the TV universe is going to meld more
with the movies
universe.
Is that good or bad?
You know, it's if okay. you don't see the TV stuff, then you have to go all in.
Yeah.
So it's safe to say that superhero movies are not going away.
They're not going away, sir.
It's too much money, right? They even if they wanted to make them go away, they couldn't.
Yeah, Kevin Feige is the president of Marvel Studios. He's been that way since 2007. In that time, $26 billion.
Wow. It's a lot of money.
Right. And there was controversy of making the original Batman in 1989.
Right.
There was hesitancy, and they didn't want to get into that. You remember how hokey superhero shows on TV were? The Hulk and things like that. And now that is based, now this is what's driving Hollywood. I mean, Hollywood could not survive without these.
And you know, you have to thank the Dark Knight comic for that, because that's the one that switched it from, okay, we're not going to do the Adam West, we're going to do...
Did I see this? They're going to try Fantastic Four again. They've tried it twice. It's failed twice. But they're going to throw a third shot in.
Yes.
Why would it work a third time if it didn't work the first time?
Because it's a charm.
Is that what? Third time's a charm.
Third time's a charm.
All right. That's fair.
Were you a big comic book guy? I used to buy Scooby-Doo. I didn't buy, when I went to the convenience store on the little rack.
Right.
I bought all the cartoon ones.
Also your 45s and albums, of course.
Right, sure, exactly. Right, at Goldblatt's. But I was never a big comic book guy. I'm really not into this craze. No, I feel very detached.
I was deep in.
Were you?
And that's that really, the movies that they're making now were the comics of the 70s. Because they were getting angstier, they were getting a little more adult. Of course, it flourished in the 80s with the aforementioned Dark Knight and such. But this was, since the level of movies have to appeal to a certain block of folk, I mean, it's
right. But don't you start to see a sameness? As much as I like these movies, I keep going, okay, here's a guy who through some strange means has a power. He's a reluctant superhero. He's not sure this is in his best interest to do this, but okay, I'll save it. I keep seeing that same story over and over with some variation.
Well, yeah, the comics books industry has lasted for 80 years with the last
with that story.
So basically the movies are taking the mantle of that, and the creativity is, how do we make this different?
Right.
How do we make the familiarity a little more less familiar and a little more...
How deep is the bench, though? Because, I mean, you've been mentioning... there's been so many, remakes of Spider-Man.
Right.
And we're finding, you're just talking about the Fantastic Four, recycling that. And now you mentioned this
Shang-Chi.
Now I never heard of that. I thought that was number 17 on the menu. So where did that come from? Like, was that ever a real famous comic book, or are they really digging
it
down?
It wasn't famous.
73 during the Kung Fu craze, and the character just fades into the universe, and occasionally they bring him back. I don't know the history of the comic book, but it's just, again, they're looking for characters. Like Doctor Strange, you knew him before he came back.
But the same of Black Panther and Iron Man. Yes. Sometimes the B and C listers, for some reason, the movie's a good movie. It gives them new life. All right, we'll take a quick break. Patrick McDonald will tell you everything you need to know about Quentin Tarantino's new movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yep. That's a minute away. It's Bill and Jim in for Wendy on WGN. Jim, is it possible we have tickets to give away to see Kris Kristofferson?
Why
is that
me?
Possible?
Why
a
me,
A pair
Lord.
Of tickets to see folk troubadour Kris Kristofferson at the Chicago Theater on Friday, the 15th of November. Don't miss this all-American legend performing his classics. He'll be joined by Merle Haggard's band, The Strangers. You can get tickets starting Friday, this upcoming Friday, tomorrow at 10 a.m. at Ticketmaster.com, or you can win a pair right now just by caller 5 at 312-981-7200.
He's a legend.
He's a legend.
This is a legend.
He's a legend.
This is pretty cool.
I know. It's Legend Tour. Caller 5, 312-981-7200 wins that pair of tickets. Patrick McDonald is here. You know Patrick from HollywoodChicago.com. He's a tour guide at Chicago Film Tour. He's here to tell us about a movie that I've been waiting a long time to see, and that's Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. What'd you think, Patrick?
Well, I really, really, really liked it. It's sort of like a tone poem, I would call it, because it's set in a world where 1969 Hollywood, a time and place that will never come again, unrecognizable to us today. And obviously he has the passion for that era and in the incredible recreation of it. And of course, in the background is the Manson family and the Sharon Tate murders. So this was a pivotal year for Los Angeles. And it kind of takes you through the story with Leonardo DiCaprio's Rick Dalton, who had a fictional Western show in the late 50s, early 60s. His career sort of on the decline. His stunt double, played by Brad Pitt, is Cliff Booth. And they're kind of like partners in crime. Mm-hmm. They're trying to revive, both of them are trying to revive their careers after a somewhat decline throughout the 1960s.
All right.
So, you know, it's aging actors, hippies, you know, which completely changed the game in California. Summer of Love was 67. 2 years later, 69. Arguably, that was the end of it. So,
Your other big star is Margot Robbie playing Sharon Tate.
Yes, she plays Sharon Tate. Emile Hirsch plays Jay Sebring, who was one of the victims.
Who plays Charles Manson in this?
Charles Manson is played by Damien Harriman.
I'm not sure who that is.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's...
Is he as good as Steve Railsback was?
Oh, Helter Skelter.
He was great.
Well, first, he doesn't make as many appearances, doesn't really get a grip in the film. He's sort of overseeing it. But, yeah, Railsback was amazing.
Oh, that was... And think about that. That was a made-for-TV movie.
Yes. I mean, chilling.
It was... I could still remember his eyes.
So scary.
That was so much part of that era, you know, from the moment the murders happened throughout, like, probably 10 years afterward, it was still something that was hanging in the universe.
Oh, without question.
Yeah.
Quentin Tarantino has a penchant for making a story a little bit on the violent side.
Yes.
Does that hold up with this movie?
There is violence in it, but it's not as prevalent as his other films.
Yeah.
But there is, obviously, there is a time of extreme violence in it.
It almost seems like it's you described it earlier. It's almost kind of like a buddy film to some extent. So does the Manson thing, is it a natural progression?
Yes, because the Spahn Ranch, where the Manson family was holding up, is sort of like a commune, was presumably where Rick Dalton had his show was Bounty Hunter.
I see, okay.
And so, you know, that gets involved in the whole universe of 1969. That's what was most interesting about it. He's in love with that era of Hollywood.
Yeah.
And he is meticulously recreating it. So that is, the atmosphere of the film was the best thing for me. I gave it 4 out of 5 just for that.
Yeah.
You know, the story, there's some questionable elements of it, but you just have to kind of go with the flow. You know, Tarantino's interested in very weird things, you know, and I'm sure as he's doing this script, he's writing down what he wants to focus on in this world of 1969 that he's creating. And what he focuses on may be something that you might be interested in, maybe not. It depends. But there were some amazing points in the film. There's a scene, this is not a spoiler, where Sharon Tate goes and sees herself in the Dean Martin film, The Wrecking Crew. And her sitting watching herself in the movie theater in 1969, you know, and hearing the reaction of the crowd, you know, and smiling. The thing with Sharon Tate, which is very, very interesting, she was just so gorgeous that wherever she was noticed.
Oh, sure.
So her first film was Barabbas in 1961. She's noticed by Richard Bremer, who, you know, was in West Side Story, gets her a screen test. You know, Jack Palance notices her in another movie where she's doing a bit part. She tries out for the Cincinnati Kid, so Steve McQueen notices her.
Roman Polanski.
Yeah, and of course Roman Polanski with the lady vampire.
So, Patrick, again, to summarize, 4 stars out of 5 for the new movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Great to see you. Thank you so much for stopping by. It's Patrick McDonald, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com, tour guide of Chicago Film Tour. Jasmine, what did we need? Oh, this. I'm sorry.
Are you probiotic or antibiotic? You still haven't answered. You know,
you're probiotic.
Okay.
I'm probiotic. Coming up, the stories that matter with Ryan Burrow from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.